Hi there, and welcome to Swiss Info's program for November the 8th. I'm Veronica Devorin-Byrne.
Imagine a country where everything is a luxury. Moving around is a luxury. You have people being arrested for 13 years without any charge against them, without any trial. They just disappear. Asking about if your husband is in prison, asking about him can land you in prison as well. Very expensive. Somebody that makes $12 a month and the life expense is probably like $50 a month per family. You can hardly survive unless you have somebody outside that sends you money. Electricity is scarce. Water shortage, everything. I mean, where you have to serve in a military from the age of 17 until you are 50, basically you are a slave of the regime.
This place is Eritrea, and the person describing it is Maren Estefanos. She's an Eritrean journalist living in Sweden who hosts a radio show broadcast to her country people around the world. Because of the conditions she just described, many of them end up in Switzerland as asylum seekers, where they make up the country's largest asylum seeker population. In Europe, only Sweden and Germany have more Eritrean migrants than Switzerland. Here's what lies ahead of them if they decide to leave for Europe.
You would walk, you know, by car, they would drive you, you would pay a smuggler. Your hands depend on that smuggler who will have to smuggle you from Sudan all the way to Libya, which will take 13 days. You are put in a pickup car that do not even fit for six people, but they would put you 36 people in that small pickup car with nothing to cover on you in the middle of the Sahara, where the weather is like the sun is shining, it's very hot, you are thirsty. And because they do not want to carry a lot of water, so they will put gasoline inside the water. So when you're thirsty, and they will give it to you so that you don't drink a lot. So you will just take a little bit to quench your thirst, but at the same time, it's unbearable to drink it. So that way they save the water. That's what the smugglers do. And you have children with you. They would give the children sleeping pills. We're talking about babies that get like five, six sleeping pills that could kill them. But that's how they want it. The smuggler have decided that it's going to be like that. I don't want a baby crying with you or something. And if you end up, if somebody falls from the car, because it's very, you have packed, you know, people like sardines in one small car. If somebody falls and you try to stop the driver, he will push you. So seeing your younger brother just fall, you cannot even say, my brother fell, because you will be pushed and you are in the Sahara, you will die there out of thirst. So after crossing all that, you come to the border of Libya. Chances are there also that you will get kidnapped, tortured, pay ransom, and then you will be taken to prison and you will have to bribe somebody. There is no way to get out of the Libyan prison. The only way to get out is by paying $1,200. You will beg for money, and then after all that, you will be released. Get on the boat, a boat that carries maybe 50 people. You will have 500 people in it. And then you will come to Italy. Finally, if you are lucky, you'll make it to Italy. And once you're there, you know, where are you from? Eritrea. Okay, here. Welcome. And they will give you humanitarian asylum within a few days and tell you, okay, you are on your own, dump you in Milan or somewhere else. You have nowhere to go. You have no welfare system. You have no language system where you have to learn a language or something. And then you are told off, yeah, well, you have been given asylum. You need all kind of medical treatment, psychological treatment and all that, but you do not have that right. So, of course, you will try to go to Sweden, Swiss and other places where you think you can have a safer place. So this is the kind of, this is the reason that people do not stay in Italy or something, that they move around because there is no help for them.
So why take the risk if the stakes are so high? I talked to my Swiss Info colleague, Stefania Summermatter, who works for our Italian service, to find out. She recently got back from a reporting trip to Ethiopia, the gateway for many Eritreans heading north. Why were the people, the Eritreans that you met in Ethiopia, so desperate to leave? Why were they willing to take all of these impossible risks?
I think they feel they have nothing to lose. That's the point. And they always say, we put our life in God's hands. And, you know, for them, I think from the beginning, Ethiopia and Sudan are just a starting point of their travel. So they come to Ethiopia to find a first protection and to organize the travel to Europe. And even the people, even the refugees that would like to stay in Ethiopia, after some years, they start to get just desperate because they do not have any chance to find a work. The life in the camps is just spending their time waiting, doing nothing. They cannot go to school. They do not have books to read. It's normal that young people, because almost 100% of those refugees are young, they dream of a different life. They dream of having a family, a job, an education. At the end, they just decide, okay, here it's not a life, so what else? We try.
You spoke to many of these young people who want to leave and want to ultimately get to Switzerland in Europe. What expectations do they have of what they'll find when they arrive here?
They have really big expectations and sometimes unrealistic. They imagine Europe or Switzerland as a country where everything is working well and they really have the chance to get an education. So all of them, they told me, we want to go to school because in Eritrea we cannot. So we want to come to Switzerland to go to school. The main point is also that the refugees that are in Switzerland are sharing comments, pictures on Facebook with positive things. They do not say that also life in Switzerland could also be difficult. Of course, it's not comparable with Eritrea, but it could be difficult as well to find a job and to get the chance to go to school for refugees. They prefer not to tell that because they represent the hope for all the family and sometimes for the community. So they just say that everything is wonderful, maybe because they believe that it's wonderful, even if it is difficult.
Of all of the stories that you heard or that you came across on your trip, is there one that will stay with you for a long time or that left the most considerable impression on you?
Yeah, I think it's the story of two girls that I met in Addis Abeba. They crossed the border alone when one of the two girls was still minor. And they spent some time in the camps and then they arrived in Addis Abeba. And now they are waiting for an answer from the Swiss authorities to come to Switzerland and to join their brother. And I went to their flat. It's like 2 meters squares. It's just a room. And in the afternoon, and they tried to close the door, and actually they broke the key in the door, and we couldn't open the door anymore. So it was a Sunday afternoon, and they started panic, and we spent hours waiting for someone to come and to help us. So took the food that they had left from the day before, and they started like warming up the food in this room. When I saw that, I thought, okay, maybe they are hungry and they want to spend the time. And actually, it was for me. It was a kind of sign to excuse, to say sorry, and to say also welcome in our house. And I told them, just please, I've already eaten, so just keep that for you, because I knew that they do not have nothing, and it was impossible. I had to eat everything with them, and that was really something that was really something special for me. That was an experience, most of all because at the beginning they were so scared. They didn't want to talk to me. They thought that I came from the embassy, that I was like a spy, and I had to convince them that they could trust me. And then at the end they shared almost everything that they had with me.
Swissinfo Stefania Sommermatter. Those two girls Stefania talked about have now been joined by their brother in Addis Ababa. and she thinks they may try to make it to Switzerland on their own by taking the risky route across the desert. That route includes the lawless Sinai Peninsula, officially a demilitarized zone. There, groups of Bedouins kidnap refugees trying to make their way north. They take them, torture them, and give them mobile phones. While they're being tortured, they have to call their families and demand tens of thousands of dollars in ransom for their lives. No governments have stepped in to stop it so far, although a few people accepting money for the kidnappers in Europe have been convicted. The stories are harrowing and numerous. Because she became a sort of contact for her fellow Eritreans, Maren can spend hours a day talking to victims as they're being tortured, trying to negotiate their release. She tells me one story she can't forget, about a man who paid his friend to get him and his two daughters out of Eritrea. That friend then sold them to Bedouin kidnappers. The story may be upsetting to young or sensitive listeners.
He woke up 21 days later in Sinai. So then he saw that he was being chained with other people, and then he was shocked. He didn't know where he was, and he didn't see his daughters with him. So he said, "Where are my daughters?" And he started screaming and asking for his daughters, and they said, "Oh, okay, we'll bring them." So they brought his daughters, and five men gang raped his daughters in front of him, and that just drove him crazy. He totally went out of his mind. Then, you know, he would lose his consciousness because the pain was too unbearable. Not to be able to protect his daughters was too much for him. So then he lost consciousness, and then he would regain his consciousness 10 days later, and he would say, "Where are my daughters?" And they would do that every time he wakes up, he regains his consciousness, and they would rape his daughters again and again. At last, you know, he totally lost his mind, and he didn't even know who he was or if he had daughters or not.
The kidnappers demanded $40,000 in ransom for each of them. They could only raise money for one at first, and against his wishes, the father was released instead of the daughters. He ended up in the hospital in Israel. The daughters were finally released 6 months ago with severe mental trauma and were deported back to Ethiopia. Some of those who face torture in the Sinai end up in Switzerland, among the thousands who come as asylum seekers and refugees. Through September of this year, almost 6,000 Eritrean asylum seekers ended up on Swiss soil, three times as many as in 2013. But once they get here, they can be taken aback by their living conditions. My colleague Simon Bradley spoke with Eritrean asylum seekers who are protesting their accommodations in an underground nuclear bunker in western Switzerland.
These people are housed in shelters which about 50 to 60 migrants live together. They're underground, there are no windows, there's very limited privacy. They have to get up at 7:30, I think, every morning, and then have to leave the bunker out the whole day, and they have to return in the evening. So essentially they sleep there. These people, average stays between a few months, and some of them are there up to a year. I spoke to people who basically they say, you know, the conditions are, they can't sleep at night, it's noisy. They're exhausted, these people, and they can't quite understand. You know, they've left Eritrea, places like where there is a connotation, a very close association with underground bunkers. And now here they are arriving in Switzerland, and they can't understand why they're here in living in a bunker. The associations who are following them closely are worried about their mental and physical health, which they say has deteriorated. It's true that when you were in Lausanne, in the centre, you see these people wandering around. It's often very cold. They have the whole day to themselves, they just hang around the whole day, and then they have to go back and sleep in a bunker.
It's not at all clear how and whether this issue should be addressed. The authorities say they're doing their best to house the waves of asylum seekers coming in, and the law isn't totally clear.
Within the Swiss constitution, there is a vague article which says that persons in need, unable to provide for themselves, should have the right to assistance and to financial means required of a decent standard of living. So the question is, what is a decent standard of living? What is the minimum requirement? There was a court decision last year specifically against a complaint from an asylum seeker in Vaud who was living in a fallout shelter. And the decision by the federal court was that living in such a condition was not degrading or against minimum requirements. So it's a fine balance. The authorities who are providing for the accommodation in Vaud, they say, unfortunately, the reality is that they've had a sharp increase of asylum seekers and Vaud is having to deal with 8% of the total figure in Switzerland, and there is an acute lack of housing, and they are doing their best to look after these people. The other option would be that these people sleep on the streets. So the whole question turns around, you know, what is the minimum requirement? Should Switzerland be doing more for these people? Putting people in bunkers, is this acceptable? Or is this a reflection of Switzerland's sort of toughening, more hardline attitude towards asylum seekers?
That was my colleague Simon Bradley. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Devorin-Byrne. You can find lots more coverage of issues facing Eritreans in Switzerland on our website, swissinfo.ch.